Welcome to the Brands Working Remote Talking Influencers Q&A. We're taking our fireside chat to the Grin Gets Real podcast. Now you can listen and learn beyond the webinar experience. During our fireside chat with Sarah, she gave us the rundown of how to growth hack influencer marketing. Working at an agency as the head of influencer marketing, she's created a repeatable process that her team can implement to achieve high-performing campaigns and rockstar influencer programs. So put your AirPods in, turn up the volume, and get ready for a little influencer marketing Q&A with Sarah from Mute 6. All right, Sarah, thank you so much for joining me on the Grin Gets Real podcast, an extension of the Brands Talking Influencers fireside chat we just had. This is where we get to the unanswered questions that everybody is just dying to learn more about. You ready to get down to the nitty gritty?
Yeah, it feels like this is like one of those bodegas where you open up the fridge and then there's like a speakeasy down there. I love it. I'm excited.
Yes, exactly. All right. So we got to some of the questions during the live portion. So let's take a look at what we have here, what we didn't answer. So first question is, for payment, what is a good model to hone in on how much to pay a micro influencer? We typically pay in product, which is about a $300 value, but more and more, we are asked for money as well. In doing so, is there a best formula or does that take into account ER and follower count engagement rate?
I was going to say ER engagement rate. Got it. Yes. So one thing that we do is we ask the influencers what their media kit and rates are, mm-hmm. but also provide the campaign as well. So they know what deliverables, they know what products we're giving them. What I wouldn't be shy on and just make sure that you're including is the product cost. So when you're telling them, we're going to give you this 2 months supplies shake or supplement, let them know it's $300. You can put it like in parentheses right there, right in front. And so when they send you their media kit and rates, you can say, okay, well, you're asking for $100. We're going to give you $300. Is that cool? Like, I don't know how much more we can give you. So you really have to level with the influencer. Sometimes micro influencers are empowered to make money. There's a lot of other influencers that just say like, here's how you can make 10 grand in 2 weeks. And it's unfortunate because it might give them some opportunities, but for me, it's a big turnoff and a red flag because I know that I need to show performance for the brand that I'm working with. So when I'm paying an influencer, I would, one, consider how many followers they're getting, how much engagement. What I also ask, even if they're not posting on their Instagram stories, is like, tell me your most, like, show me screenshots of your most recent engagement on your Instagram stories. If they're not getting any sticker clicks, if they're not getting any website swipe ups, it's probably not a good partnership. And even though an influencer like is very professional, you don't have to go forward and work with every influencer that comes along. In terms of actually paying out influencers, I really based it off of performance. So sometimes influencers would be open to a commission model where you pay them based off of how many sales they're bringing in. And sometimes influencers are confident enough to move forward. Unfortunately, a lot of brands don't relay how much revenue influencers are generating for them. So not all influencers are confident in working in a performance model based off of sales. So then what I do is I calculate, okay, what is their CPM rate, cost per 1,000 views? And if it's in line with what you're seeing on other platforms, like for Facebook advertising, Instagram advertising, any Google advertising, and kind of like holistically pull that together and say, okay, an influencer's rate to reach 1,000 viewers is $100, but I'm seeing it closer to $10 when we're using like Facebook, Instagram paid media channels. It's not a good partnership. But then I know I have a goal to negotiate down to. So that's what I would do. And you don't have to explain your calculations on the back end. You can just give like, hey, that doesn't work for us. Or like, if we're closer to this range, it would be an easier like go ahead for us. But if that's not the right time or like the right rates for you, you can always go back and re-engage with the influencer at a later time. But I would always keep in mind performance and then also try to create some sort of standard metric. And what's best for us in the brands that we work with is the CPM rates, cost to reach 1,000 people.
Yeah, I like that you continue to say that, as well as just because they're asking for something doesn't mean that you have to give it to them. Everything is a lot about just the negotiation part and also building out that relationship, because maybe they're asking for a specific amount because they think it's short term, right? Well, this is the one thing that I'm going to do for you, even if it's just one campaign. Maybe if there's more, I'm willing to bend as an influencer or creator.
That's a really great point too. And another way to kind of lower the cost is ask for bundles. So if you influencers will most likely give you a rate per platform, but then also like per placement. So an Instagram story would be a different cost as an in-feed post, which would be different than an Instagram Reels. And then also influencers kind of like bundle other things like including a link in bio and doing a blog post and all these extra things that you didn't ask for. So if you also want to try another tactic to lower rates, I would say try bundling, especially if you're confident in the influencer. Let's say let's do 5 Instagram stories. I would recommend breaking that up into at least 2 to 3 different time periods so that you're re-engaging with the influencer's audience. And then also bundle that with like maybe 2 in-feed posts to support the content as well. And also to test different placements. And that way, if you're like breaking it up per post, per placement, it might be 10 times more expensive if you're bundling it all up and saying, we'll pay you 1 flat fee, but work with you over the course of 3 months if you do these like 15 placements.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. When the sneaker brand tested content on TikTok, did they post the influencer's content on the creator's channel or the brand's channel?
So when we were working with the TikTok influencer, it was one in particular, because most brands are a little bit, it's challenging for brands.
Okay. So it's a lot coming out. Lots of thoughts.
It's challenging for some brands to test TikTok as a new platform. It's also a different type of content where it's not always beautiful and aesthetic and perfect that you might see on Instagram or YouTube. So we were able to only test with one influencer and we needed to make it right. So the influencer posted on their own channel. And that's where we saw the spike in revenue, is when the influencer posted on her own. What she did was she tagged the brand in the comments, and she also included a discount code in the comments, and she also included it as text embedded within the creative. What we did with her content actually is we repurposed it for ads. So we saw the direct revenue from this one influencer, but she used a lot of TikTok trends and the transitions that translate really well as a Facebook ad, an Instagram story ad, an in-feed post ad, that we were able to really expand the return from working with this one influencer. And so from that one collaboration, we ended up doing pretty big campaign just with TikTok influencers.
It was a good return on investment on with that one particular influencer. I am also really curious for that particular TikTok post that she did. You mentioned using like the trends and then transitions, which I think is really key because that's part of what makes TikTok TikTok. But did it come off more like a promotion? Like, hey, these are the Snibs shoes, Snibs, Snibs. Or was it more of just a more organic post or more organic feel to what it is that she was delivering? Does that question make sense?
Yeah. So what it's also a challenge in influencer marketing, because you want to work with influencers that know what they're doing, but there's also influencers that post and promote products literally every single post. And that at that point, they're most likely in engagement pods. That's another way to detect it. Their audience mm-hmm. is most likely exhausted, and they might not trust the opinion of the influencer because yeah. they'll post whatever brand deal they can get. So yeah. with this influencer, it was cool. So she had a mix of different tactics that really worked well for her, at least mm-hmm. at the time she was posting on TikTok. So yeah. one, she was using a trending sound. It was kind of like, what's it? Like an MC Hammer kind of like,
yeah.
super hype, like hip hop. I don't even know, but I don't know. I was
hoping you were going to bust out with MC Hammer right now. Yeah. That was a little bit of hope.
But the music was trending at the time. And so, I don't know, it was like funky and cool. And so what she did was she wore sunglasses the entire time, and that caught people's attention. And so what she was doing is she was like dancing on screen and having a good time and like really getting loose and comfortable, but she was always pointing to her sneakers, and she would like get down low and crouch and like have her foot in front of her, like pointing toward the camera. So it was clear that like, even though it's a trendy kind of post, the sneakers are up front. And the last tactic that she used is the text on screen embedded in her photos. She didn't have to explain what the product was, or she didn't have to go in a lengthy caption like you do on Instagram. Instead, she embedded very, very simple value props of the sneaker. For example, it was water resistant, slip proof, comfortable. You know, she was talking about the soles, but it was maybe like 5 words each time text flashed the screen. So people could digest the information while they were being entertained by like her silly dancing in the background.
I love it. I'm a huge fan of TikTok too. So I love hearing all of those things. All right, next. What sort of tools like affiliate links or discount code promo codes can we employ if we have no online store presence? Our food is only available in independently owned pet specialty retailers. It's very specific.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that would be a little bit challenging, but there are a few different tactics you can use in terms of how you design your packaging to see a return on your investment. So you won't. So something that I've seen and I've worked with brands on is implementing QR codes. And so mm-hmm. when you scan the QR code, that's when you're brought to like a simple questionnaire, including how did you discover that us? That's how you attribute your revenue back to influencer marketing without being able to capture customer information off the bat. And then also I would recommend rewarding anyone who completes the survey to incentivize them by giving them some sort of discount to purchase again another time, or doing some sort of, I've seen a lot of rebate marketing where it includes a questionnaire and you say like, we'll give you some sort of rebate if you fill out this form. And then as you fill out the form, it's all digitalized. So that's how you can track your success working with the influencers and make a smart decision to move forward. Again, it's another step for your customer to take. So I wouldn't expect a majority of customers to follow through and complete that second action by scanning the code, but it should give you some insight, especially if you're starting to see a number of respondents, and you can say, you know, like 20% of the people who responded say that they heard of us from influencers. So let's just assume that like 20% of total retail sales are coming from influencer marketing.
Yeah, I think that there's got to be an email hack, because I had run a program very similar, well, not very similar because it had nothing to do with dogs or dog food, but it had to do with really just brick and mortar lashes, right? Like, how are you tracking the success of that? And you can give like a specific discount code as well too, but you can also track, you know, the email address, right? Like maybe the influencer is asking for them to go to a specific link to set, you know, to submit their email address so that they can get a promo code that they can use, right? And then you can link that back to whatever POS system that you use if you are part of a more brick and mortar brand. All right. So when you're reaching out to a cold influencer, how do you frame things so that people trust you and respond?
This is a good one. So I would be consistent in your pitches. And one thing that we use is if you have any notable celebrities or maybe notable press mentions, include that in the subject line. So we work with one brand where they have an incredible quote from Billie Eilish. Everyone knows who she is. And we say, you know, like, you know, brand X influencer username, Billie Eilish's favorite drink, or a quote from Billie Eilish, and then end it with her name. So that gives some instant credibility. You can also reinforce that in your initial message and saying like, or you can generalize it too and say like, moms all over the country have given us 5-star reviews. Here's a few notable ones. And you just include that in your pitch entirely. What we also can do is use the follow-ups as a strategy to inform your influencers about a little bit more insight and making your brand a little bit more credible. So for example, I'm working with a superfood bread company, and, you know, like with anything superfood and supplements and food in general, especially when you're a smaller brand, it's challenging one to compete against the bigger guys. And then also if you're manufacturing the product yourself, you have to have a lot of credibility and a lot of process in place to make sure that the quality of the product is really high. So what we would do in follow-up emails, if we don't receive a response from an influencer, maybe 2-3 days after our initial pitch, what we'll do is we'll send them an overview of the nutritional information. So 10 grams of fiber, 2 net carbs, no sugar added, just like bulleted out. And in that second, that like first follow-up, that's where we see most of our replies, one, that are positive, and two, just in general, that's where our replies come from. And so that's how you can include more credibility in your brand, is like use the follow-ups, give like micro pieces of information that you're not just dumping everything and everything onto an influencer, so they can see over time, like, wow, like this, they have these reviews and this is their process and this is how they manufacture it. And this is like, it's all USA made and but it's all spread out over time. And that also gives you a reason to re-engage with influencers that might've dropped off too.
Absolutely. Instead of saying like, hey, did you get my last DM or did you get my last email? You wanna? All right. With promo codes for influencers, do you find that brands are fearful of this as they can cheapen the perception of the brand? This is such a great question. So much trepidation when it comes to promo codes, I feel like.
Yes. This one is very, I get this question a lot. And there's a few ways you can get around discount codes, because it happens. A lot of brands don't like giving out discount codes. And then even brands that do give out discount codes, a lot of the time it ends up on affiliate sites or, you know, like RetailMeNot. And so a lot of brands don't consider that a true conversion from an influencer because it was discovered on like a coupon website. So one, it's really easy to detect that if you see one influencer just blowing out of the water and just generating sales. And, you know, they posted maybe a few weeks ago. Just search their discount code on Google and you should be able to find every single site that lists it. But then in terms of tracking revenue without discount codes, one, links. Like if you're on Shopify, there is a pattern where you can embed a discount code in a link that you give influencers. The pattern is like brand.com/discount/code. And so you can give the influencer that code, you can like that link, you can mask it as like a bit.ly. So anyone who clicks it doesn't even see that it's like /discount/code. And that's one way to create discount codes that are only using links. We use Grin to create links without any discounts. So that way we can track how many clicks, how many unique visitors, but we can also track revenue just through like a snippet of code at the checkout page. Super simple. At this point, I can do it with my eyes closed. it's just a copy and paste. But that way we can track revenue without any discount codes. Again, there's the attribution issue where they discover on Instagram, swipe up,
yeah,
but then they purchase on story or they purchase on desktop. And in that case, the only real solution is a post-purchase survey. So just asking everyone, wherever they're coming from, how do you discover us? Can also incentivize people who answer. So fill this out for 10% off your next purchase. So maybe the first time they didn't receive any discount, but the second time, knowing that, you know, if you can get them twice to purchase, they're probably going to be a longer customer. The LTV, the lifetime value, is going to be greater. And you also get these insights, just understanding how successful influencer marketing is for your brand.
It is all about the long game, like thinking beyond just, you know, the first part. And honestly, I feel like attribution is something as marketers, we're always chasing. I don't think that there's any program within marketing or any marketing strategy where you're not trying to chase attribution and get credit for something. Okay. Next question. Would you suggest trying to get the ads or usage rights for content beforehand or wait until an influencer gifted product creates and posts the content and then ask them for permission before or after?
This is an easy one. Before, always before, yeah. before. If I didn't mention it before. So we use the campaigns that we create just also to review what's in a campaign. So yeah. It gives us it gives the influencer an overview of the product, the brand. It also gives the influencer an idea of timeline. So after 2 weeks receiving product, you are required to post. And yeah. It will also identify what deliverables the influencer is required to meet. So where they're posting, how many times they're posting. Maybe it's like includes certain hashtags, certain username tags, all of it. And what we do is before the influencer can click submit, what we do is we include a content rights section where the influencer has to check off and agree to content rights before they can go ahead and submit the campaign. So this is like a typical standard format in Grin. It like does this all for you. You don't have to do anything, whatever. Oh, something that I forgot to mention is also it explains what products influencers are getting too. But like even as a brand starting out, I had to hack everything together through like Google spreadsheets and, you know, every like I've started the same place where everyone else has done. And you can create just a Google form where you're doing this, asking the same questions, you're giving an overview, you're letting influencers see the products, but also requiring including a required field where the influencer must check off content rights in a section that just says, I agree with a checkbox in order for them to complete the form. That's one way to kind of hack it together and guarantee content rights, having it being a required section to agree to. We do get feedback from influencers every once in a while saying, you know, like, I love this campaign. It's great for me. Love your products, but I don't want to agree to content rights right now. That's something that you should discuss with your brand and seeing, okay, does that make sense to move forward? I know for a lot of brands I work with, content is king. And if we can't get the content, especially working with these micro influencers, really doesn't make sense for us to move forward. Because the only benefit that we get is if the influencer converts. And that's not as likely the first time around. So in that case, what I would recommend doing is just locking in rates for their content. So let's say like we want you to post, we want to see how it does in terms of organic performance. We would, if it makes sense for us after you post, for us to repurpose in ads or repost it on our social accounts, we want to lock in rates with you right now. So in the future, when the influencer has, you know, 100,000 more followers, they're locked in the rates where you agreed to, you know, like they can't backtrack and say, you know, we have like double the amount of followers. And since you can use our name, we're going to charge you more, but you have at least the rates locked in, whether or not you're going to use it or not. And that way you can just re-engage with the influencer and acquire their content at an affordable price.
That's really great advice. You're just dropping so many nuggets here, Sarah. This is insane. All right. Is it better to use nano influencers than macro influencers in a branding campaign?
In a branding campaign. So if a branding campaign means awareness, the larger influencers will
give you the eyeballs
more efficiently.
Yeah.
But with that, they will most likely ask for payment. So one thing to do is just gift influencers that are more macro without any expectations in terms of deliverables. Like if you love the product, post about it. If you don't, no worries. Enjoy your day. Hope you have a good life, whatever it is. that way you can keep costs as low as possible just mm-hmm. by gifting without any expectations. With that, like you are going to see some loss. Some influencers won't post. Maybe they'll prioritize other paid collaborations. But yeah. if the branding means awareness, then I would move forward with like bigger influencers. Something unique that we've been seeing work really well is partnering with smaller influencers on TikTok and actually mm-hmm. whitelisting their content. So that's just putting a budget on TikTok. Whitelisting is more like boosting content where yeah. you really can't change the caption. You can't change the creative or the video that they post. But what you can do is put a budget behind their content so they get more impressions, they get more engagement, and you can see all the metrics and analytics behind it. You can also, like a fun fact is you can add a call to action where if you click the button at the very bottom of the video on your For You page, you can actually track whoever visits your website and also purchases, but it should help drive more awareness working with the smaller influencers. If branding means getting better content for your brand or like mm-hmm. creating some sort of brand for your product, I would go for the micro influencers that are more content creators. We can mm-hmm. even say the nano influencers. That way you can get content with really efficient costs. A lot of the times we're just sending out products. And like to give you an example, when even I like started influencer marketing, my first brand at Mute 6 was a deodorant brand where it was literally like $6 to $10 and we were just sending out product. The brand didn't have a great identity. And so we were just sending out product to micro influencers. And I'm like, these influencers are taking $10 products and making the most beautiful content. Don't ask questions, Sarah, because none of this makes sense. But if you pitch your brand in the right way and you give the right value props, micro influencers will be excited to work with you. And also they'll be able to create content that will define your brand in a better way too.
I love it. How does your approach to list building differ when approaching YouTube campaigns?
Gotcha. So YouTube is a little bit more challenging when we build influencer lists. One, like I haven't found the perfect database just to put in a search term and it will recommend the perfect influencers for us. So I would use YouTube as its own search engine. So go into YouTube, search different keywords and think of like who your perfect influencer would be and what they would title their YouTube posts. So for example, I gave this example for the live webinar is if we're looking for influencers who have started their own company, a phrase that I would search in YouTube would be how I started my business. And I could also get a little bit more defined in saying how I started my candle business, how I started my fashion business. And so that gets a little bit more defined in terms of the demographic you're looking for. And all of the search results should be influencers that you partner with. And how YouTube works is it prioritizes content with the most video views, the most engagement. And so those are going to be the biggest influencers to work with. With that being said, there are some YouTubers that have, 5,000 followers, but some of their videos, they just hit it on the nail with the SEO and they're getting hundreds and thousands of impressions because they just had the right title at the right time. So that's how I would approach YouTube influencer list building. And to find their contact information, there's a few ways. One is if you go to the about section of the channel page, sometimes it'll list their email address and like a little clickable button. You can go ahead and find it there. Sometimes it's not available, but they will list their other social handles kind of at the banner of their channel. And yeah. So what I usually do is go to Instagram, if they have it listed, see if they have a contact button there, and then just find their email there. Or I can just send them a DM if it's available. So YouTube is definitely a little bit more challenging. It takes us a lot longer to, you know, dissect the best influencer list.
Well, the play is longer too when it comes to YouTube. You're asking for videos, and so the prices are different. Like, yeah, I mean, I feel like YouTube is definitely its own entity. I'd also say that we've got the verified email addresses for YouTubers as well too. So once you're done doing that, you can also just kind of plug and take a look to see if we have that contact information as well too, in Grin, that is. Can you make some suggestions for B2B companies looking to take advantage of influencer marketing?
Yes. So we actually work with a few B2B companies. The process is a little bit different. So with B2B companies, I would definitely recommend carving out a budget. It's a little bit more challenging to recruit influencers because it's not an immediate reward a lot of the times, right? Mm-hmm. Like if I'm sending a product, the influencer can get it. They can hold it in their hands. There's a value to it. But if you're a B2B business, you might have a free version that everyone uses. And so for an influencer, they're like, I can just use the free version. Like, why do, like, the pro I'll use once and I'll never use it again. So I would definitely carve out some sort of budget working with them. In terms of sourcing, I wouldn't leave out LinkedIn. Actually, I have a whole community of like LinkedIn creators. The best database to use is the Sales Navigator on mm-hmm. LinkedIn, which is a little bit more premium, but you're able to sort through different job titles, how long they've been at the company, the industry that they're in. And then when you're reaching out to influencers more on like a B2B scale, you can most likely figure out their work email, just combining their first and last name with their company website. That's just like a little hack there. Other platforms that I would look for B2B campaigns is YouTube. So the example mm-hmm. that we just went over, a lot of like businesses and especially when we're thinking about marketing and advertising, a lot of people have YouTube channels to explain their tactics. And then also TikTok has become this like B2B hub where like crypto is on there, software, productivity. I'm doing a campaign with like finance and budgeting hacks. I'm like, wow, there's a land for everything.
That is so true.
But so I wouldn't count TikTok out. You'll be able to source a lot of influencers. I haven't seen a ton of B2B brands on TikTok. And that's one reason why brands don't move forward with TikTok campaigns is they don't have a handle there. But what you can do is discover influencers on TikTok, find their contact information and just ask them like, hey, are you on Instagram? We're doing an Instagram campaign. Are you on YouTube? We're doing a YouTube campaign. Do you have Twitch? Do you have Twitter? And get their own feedback on what channels they're comfortable with posting. And that's how you create like lists for Instagram, but discovering influencers through like TikTok, YouTube, LinkedIn.
Love it. I promise we only have a handful more questions. What tools do you use to send emails? Anything like a Boomerang, Hootsuite, how to track engagement and open rates?
Sure. So shocking, we use Grin.
exactly, because we've got the integration. So just send your emails and we give you all of that information too.
So yeah, Grin, we're able to create templates. So if there's any common response from influencers, and we went over this again in the earlier recording for our webinar, but we create conversations that drive responses that are templated. So yes, I'm interested, no, I'm not interested, or what's your budget? And we just have templates that we can just like click, it'll automatically update first name, it'll automatically update handle, we can create variables that are custom. So all the things we can do through Grin. We also can create sequences with these templates. Mm-hmm. So what that looks like is cold outreach, or it could be just outreach with a batch of influencers where we can create rules where an influencer, if they don't reply, if they don't open, if they don't do a certain action, it will automatically send follow-up emails so that we don't have to think about it. So if no one's answering our pitch, we can just pester them automatically. If no one's delivering content, we can automatically follow up with them until they finally reply. It also gives us open rates, reply rates, click-through rates, all the things. If you're not ready for Grin, there are other tools that I can recommend too. One super basic one is yet another mail merge. It's a Gmail extension. It's actually, I think it's a Google Sheet extension where uh-huh. you put your list of contacts in a Google Sheet. You list their first name, and then what it does, it will say like, what draft in your inbox do you want to send out to? And then it will automatically update like which contact has opened, replied, whatever it is. So it's super basic in terms of reporting. And then there's a little bit more sophisticated one that's called Mailshake, which is pretty similar to Grin, except mm-hmm. you know, just influencer discovery. There's no campaigns. It's just that one simple
just feature. Email.
Just email. Yeah.
I love it. So for whitelisting influencers, would you boost the sponsored content on their channel, or would you repurpose it for your brand's channel and boost it there?
So for whitelisting, what we've seen best is using the influencer's channel to create an ad. So mm-hmm. it's not necessarily boosting content. The content does not live on the influencer's feed. It's an mm-hmm. ad. So that way we can test creative. So if an influencer provides us with a video, we can chop it up. You still want to make sure it looks and feels organic, but we don't have to use the exact content that they post on their own feed as an ad. We can also test the copy. So we might include like the create copy that mimics the influencer's voice in terms of a review. So like, I love this product, mm-hmm. That's the caption. Or we can test around mm-hmm. and say, maybe we need to be a little bit more informative. It just allows us to test a lot more so that we can move forward with the most successful creative and copy strategy there. I would definitely use the influencer's account to whitelist yeah. content.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's the power of whitelisting as well, too. Is the engagement rule of under 15% relevant on TikTok?
So on TikTok, we want to really only pay attention to video views. So I've seen influencers with hundreds and thousands of followers, and they literally only get a few hundred impressions, a few hundred video views. It's not uncommon. A lot of influencers, creators get exhausted and they just can't keep up with the same interesting content. And that's why we see dips. Also, uh-huh. there's a lot of new competition since TikTok is a newer platform. There's a lot uh-huh. of new creators that are just discovering it and really popping off. So yeah. in terms of TikTok, the most important ratio is engagement to video views. And so if okay. someone gets tons of engagement, sometimes they're getting a lot of video views, sometimes they're not. But that's what I would pay attention to. The sweet spot is when influencers and creators are getting at least 10,000 impressions per video. Or what you can look at and kind of guess is if an influencer randomly spikes, if you ask them to partner with you for more than one collaboration, you're probably yeah. going to hit a video that like hits gold and goes viral. So video views are the most important metric on TikTok for sure.
Love it. How do you deal with influencers that don't follow through and never deliver or deliver very low quality material? Is there a way to hold them accountable? We are an international small shop, so we do not have legal quotes, contracts, just an agreement.
Gotcha. So we typically just move ahead with, you know, like light agreements, let's call that, for unpaid influencers. You really can't, there's nothing you can do like legally. You can't sue them if you're not paying them.
Yeah.
So there's a few things that you can do just to make sure that you're setting yourself up for success. One is asking for the right information. So mm-hmm. for example, like if you can collect their phone numbers, you have a way to contact them. Maybe it's just through text, maybe it's through phone calls, just to get a quick response from them. And so they're not completely ghosting you. So that's one thing.
Yeah.
Another thing that you can maybe do is ask for other information, like, when's your birthday? So they have some sort of reason to reach out to them. And if you just say like, hey, Katya, happy birthday. We're excited that we're partnering. You're most likely going to reply back, just because there's no strings attached. There's no pressure. Yeah. And so other things like just saying like, happy holiday, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Just reaching out to influencers beyond collaboration purposes really drives conversation.
Love it. Can you ask for analytics upfront for gifted campaigns, non-paid, basically?
You can ask for anything.
That's true. That's so true. You can ask. The worst thing that they can say is no. And if you're okay with the worst thing.
Right. Exactly. So, but I would also position as like, hey, like we're thinking about doing a long-term partnership and we're really hoping to like make sure that your audience aligns with what we're looking for. So we'd love to gift you, potentially carve out a longer term partnership, but we'd love to understand who's following you and who engages with you. And so you can ask for analytics. If an influencer is shy sending it over, one, they're either, it could mean like two things. One, they're too busy and they're just like, no, this is the gifting campaign. I don't know, not worth it. Or it could be illegitimate, like a fake follower or like a fake account. Not a fake account, but an account that has some sort of way of creating followers and engagement that's not
good.
And so I see this a lot, especially on Instagram stories, where they literally block out how many impressions they get. You just see like a little eyeball with like no number next to it. I'm like, huh, this has never happened on my account.
Interesting.
But yeah, I mean, you can for sure ask for it. Again, the worst answer that you can say is no, like, or this is too much time. We're just like moving on. But influencers should be willing to work with you if you want to work with them longer term as well.
I love it. All right. Final question. Is the less revenue on first integration philosophy true on all sites, specifically YouTube? I don't think they meant integration.
So for YouTube, what I would do is pepper. So if you're working with popular YouTubers, they most likely have a presence on other channels. A lot of the times it's Instagram, sometimes it's TikTok. And so if you're thinking about remarketing to a similar audience, what I would do is have them post on Instagram, say like the same kind of tactic that we talked about earlier. Have them post, maybe it's a question on their Instagram story, opening up the conversation, then maybe posting, stories would work fine, but just letting their audience know, like a full review is happening on YouTube. And that's how you get like the similar remarketing tactics with the same audience, but also move them over to YouTube where you're doing a full unboxing and you're trying the product and, you know, you could do a time lapse or like, this is day one, day three, day seven. This is my week results. But yeah, that's the best way to remarket on YouTube. It's going to get expensive if you're asking for like three product placements and YouTube videos, just knowing that the quality of content on YouTube is top tier, premier, like it's the best of the best. And it also takes a lot of hours and time editing, creating. And so that's why we're seeing a lot more like higher rates on YouTube than any other platform. So I would just leverage the other social networks to remarket to a similar audience when you're working with YouTubers.
I love it. That was the last and final question. I have taken up so much of your time and I greatly appreciate it because you answered every single question with just so many insights, tips, hacks, everything that, you know, people want to listen to and be able to walk away from. So thank you so much from the bottom of my grin heart for all of your time.
Thank you. This was great. And I'll close it with, if anyone wants to get in touch, feel free to reach out to me via email, sarah@mute6.com. Thanks, guys.
I love it. Thank you. I hope that you gain lots of insights from Sarah. It's always really great to hear from marketers who are in the trenches of influencer marketing and learn from their story. Want to hear more? Be sure to subscribe to the Grin Gets Real podcast to get the latest episodes. And be sure to give us a rating and leave a review. That's how we get these amazing guests. If you're interested in watching the Fireside Chat with Sarah on how to growth hack influencer marketing for maximum ROI, or any of the other brands that we've featured in the past, like Able, Organifi, Trifecta, Nutribolt, and so many more, visit the live events section of grin.co. Check out our resources and blogs while you're there for more tips, tricks, and marketing trends. Until next time, keep grinning.